You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Anthony Richter. I'm the Associate Director of the Open Society Institute, and I'm Director of the Central Eurasia Project. I'd like to welcome you all here today to our open forum on Kazakhstan, problems with the rule of law and basic freedoms ahead of the OSCE chairmanship. I'd like to introduce the moderator of today's event, Anna Alexandrova. She's chair of the Executive Council of the Soros Foundation Kazakhstan, and she'll be taking charge of the program over the next hour and a half. So thank you all for attending, and Anna, the floor is yours.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for your interest in what's going on in Kazakhstan. I'm pleased to welcome here today distinguished panelists from Kazakhstani civil society, as well as my friend and partner from international community. So sitting from left to right from me is Iva Dobichina, who's the Freedom House Chief of Party in Kazakhstan. Then we have Tamara Kaleeva from Adil Soz and Ninel Fokina from Almaty Helsinki Committee. We were also expecting Jemi Sturmangabetova from Charter for Human Rights. Unfortunately, she sends her regrets. She wasn't able to come. And we will later be joined by Vera Tkachenko, who is the Director of Legal Policy Research Center in Kazakhstan and also a public defender for Yevgeny Zhovtis, who is currently imprisoned in Kazakhstan. So I wanted to say just a few words about what's going on in Kazakhstan. As we all know, in January 2010, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Kazakhstan will assume the chairmanship for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Amidst the ongoing critique of the OSCE itself as an organization and doubts about its future, Kazakhstan faces a dual challenge. As its future chair, not only it is the first country of the Commonwealth of Independent States in Central Asia to take this position, but it's also the first country that has received the chair status despite the absence of its full compliance with the international human rights standards. With a strong spotlight on its upcoming activities in 2010-2011, initially there were some hopes about improving the situation in Kazakhstan, while other critics and analysts believed that the OSCE 2010 chairmanship would only be a mere image strengthening project. Amidst the worsening human rights situation in Kazakhstan, in the lead up to the OSCE chairmanship today, you will hear from our panelists about the state of affairs in Kazakhstan, about the implications in both Yevgeny Zhovtis and Yesirgepov cases, as well as policy implications for Western governments. So I will hand it over now to Iva Dobichina from Freedom House, who will provide a short description of the situation in the country. Each panelist will speak for about 7-10 minutes with interpretation, and we will be taking questions after everyone is done, if you don't mind. So, Iva, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you all for being here. I will try to describe the indescribable in only 5 minutes. Freedom House, of course, were among the critics as far as the Kazakhstani chairmanship was concerned, as far as getting the chairmanship was concerned. However, since it was fait accompli, at one point we decided to treat it as an opportunity, and we started to believe and actually support the civil society and the government in the introduction of domestic reforms in Kazakhstan. Unfortunately, since January 2009, the situation in the country started to deteriorate rapidly in the field of human rights. The government started sending targeted messages to different civil society groups. First, with a very restrictive religious law that was later later stricken out by the Constitutional Council, but nevertheless, this law is implemented. Its concept is implemented in practice, and there were several trials against minority religious groups. The second target group, so to say, were several political opposition leaders with a very famous case called the concealment case that happened at the beginning of 2009. Then a very restrictive internet law, as I'm sure you're aware, was adopted to try to restrict freedom of expression in Kazakhstan, and also several high-profile cases against individual journalists and against independent newspapers, two of which were bankrupted already since the beginning of the year. Then the Bar Association, the National Security Service, tried to disbar two lawyers because of their public appearances and their open criticism of Kazakhstan's rule of law. Then, of course, the famous case of Mr. Yevgeny Zhovtis, that is a message to the NGO community in Kazakhstan. And I forgot to mention several high-profile cases against businessmen close to the government, which sent a very powerful message to the business community in the country, because those who were prosecuted were close to the government, and if people that are close to the elite get prosecuted, the other businessmen are asking, you know, who is next. Unfortunately, rather than changing the facts or the legislation, Kazakhstani government is trying to control the information. And I agree with what Anna was saying, that the Kazakhstani chairmanship, I believe, is an image project for Kazakhstan. You know, they certainly did not apply for the chairmanship because they are deeply concerned about the OEC as an organization, but it is an image project. And because of that, the effort now is on controlling the information as much as possible and doing PR events. We've spent the last week in DC on meetings with Senate, Congress, etc., and so did the Kazakhstani government. Of course, I need to be fair and say that there were some, and there are some, positive trends in Kazakhstan. One of them is that Kazakhstani government is talking to civil society more than ever. Now, whether they are walking the talk, that's a different thing, but the discussions are there. Another positive trend is the development of two very progressive documents, but again, we'll see whether they will be implemented. And these documents are government's legal policy strategy for 2010 till 2020. The government was presenting that in DC last week. And a national action plan on human rights. Both documents are progressive, and there are a lot of reforms, planned. However, I'm not sure that they will be implemented in practice. Because when Minister Tajin made it its Madrid commitments, which we thought are rather concrete in sense of changing the political parties legislation, election legislation, what we saw in reality is that the government indeed changed those laws, but the laws were changed in a way not to have the political elite to risk its control over power, nor to open the floor for policy alternatives. And the legislation was changed in a way to preserve the current status quo. Thank you.
Okay. Well, there will be definitely opportunities for questions, because thank you very much for such an interesting opening. And you mentioned freedom of speech, and you mentioned also that there were a few cases where two newspapers at least were bankrupt because of the defamation legislation. So I would like to turn now to Tamara Mitskhadovna Kaleeva and ask her to perhaps elaborate a bit on the state of freedom of speech in Kazakhstan.
Спасибо за то, что вы нас пригласили, во-первых, за то, что вас интересуют проблемы казахстанского общества, потому что эти проблемы действительно есть, и эти проблемы очень серьезные.
First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for inviting us. I'd like to thank you likewise for your interest in the problems of Kazakhstan, because those problems do certainly exist.
Как показывают последние два года, перспектива председательства Казахстана в ОБСЕ не стала стимулом для реальной либерализации законодательства в сфере средств массовой информации и в правоприменительной практике в отношении к журналистам и изданиям.
As we've seen over the past two years, the proposed chairmanship of Kazakhstan in OSCE has not, in effect, produced the desired results in terms of freedom of speech or in the press, likewise has not provided additional legal protections for individuals in Kazakhstan.
В прошлом 2008 году осужден на три года лишения свободы главный редактор газеты «Закон и правосудие» Такберген Абиев.
Last year, Mr. Берген Абиев, the editor of the newspaper «Закон и правосудие», which is law and right and justice, was, again, in 2008, he was sentenced to 3 years of incarceration.
Служащий государственного агентства предложил ему купить документы, которые разоблачают ряд судей судебной системы. Он согласился купить эти документы. В момент передачи денег его взяли с поличным и обвинили в даче взятки.
A representative of the prosecutor's office offered to sell him a series of documents that would be compromising to certain judges in Kazakhstan. He agreed and was subsequently arrested during the actual transaction and was charged with giving a bribe to this individual.
Мы характеризуем эту ситуацию как провокацию.
We feel that this was entrapment.
В этом году в Казахстане осуждено еще два человека за реализацию права на свободу выражения.
There are two other individuals who have been arrested this year for practicing their freedom of speech.
За публичную критику Акима, то есть губернатора Западного Казахстана, осужден на 4 года лишения свободы писатель Алпамыс Бектурганов. Алпамыс Бектурганов.
The writer Алпамыс Бектурганов was sentenced to 4 years of incarceration for defamation against Акимов, the governor Акимов. Of the governor of Eastern Kazakhstan.
На три года лишения свободы осужден главный редактор газеты «Алмата-Инфо» Рамазан Исергебов.
Mr. Рамазан Исергебов was the head editor of
Алмата-Инфо.
Of the newspaper «Алмата-Инфо» was sentenced to 3 years of incarceration.
Это дело возбудил Комитет национальной безопасности. Он обвинил журналиста в незаконном сборе и разглашении государственных секретов.
This case was brought against him by the KNB, by the Kazakh National Security, the Committee for National Security of Kazakhstan, and he was charged with the procurement and the publication of state secrets of the Republic of Kazakhstan.
Независимая экспертиза показала, что государственных секретов в опубликованном материале не было, а была информация о нарушении прав человека со стороны сотрудников Департамента Комитета национальной безопасности.
But independent forensic evaluation suggested that there were no state secrets in the articles that were published. That what the articles did show was human rights violations committed by the KNB, the Committee for National Security of the Republic of Kazakhstan.
Весь судебный процесс проходил в закрытом режиме. Журналистов не пустили, даже не запустили в зал судебного заседания, даже на оглашение приговора. И более того, сейчас Рамазан Есергепов не имеет права выбрать адвоката по своему усмотрению, ему отказывают в этом, и он не имеет возможности написать апелляционную жалобу, потому что ему не дают текст приговора, по которому он осужден.
The whole process was a closed trial. The journalists were not allowed, were barred from the courtroom, even for the sentencing proceedings of the trial. Likewise, Mr. Ramazan Isergebov was not allowed to choose his own defense attorney, and now he is not being allowed to appeal the decision, the sentencing, or the conviction, because he is not being given an opportunity to review the actual charges, the document, or the charges that were brought against him.
Только в этом году, в 2009 году, принято два новых закона, которые ограничивают сферу свободы выражения.
This year, 2009, there have been two new laws that have been signed into legislation that limit freedom of speech.
Это закон, который регулирует свободу выражения в интернете.
One of these is the law that limits the freedom of speech online in the internet.
И вчера парламент Казахстана принял и передал на подпись президенту еще один закон. Закон об усилении ответственности за вмешательство в частную жизнь.
Another law has been just yesterday has been passed on to the president to be signed into law. That law is to heightens the responsibility of individuals for getting involved in other people's personal lives.
Согласно этому закону, публикация в средствах массовой информации сведений о частной жизни любого лица без согласия этого лица грозит журналисту лишением свободы на срок до 5 лет.
According to this new law, any kind of publication of private or personal information about any individual without this individual's express consent can cause for the journalist who publishes this private or personal information to be sentenced to up to 5 years of incarceration.
Ива уже сказала, что в национальном плане действий на 2009-2011 год есть серьезные либеральные заявки. Но, к сожалению, к сфере свободы выражения, к сфере свободы слова это не относится. В планах на ближайшие 3 года ни декриминализации, диффамации, ни других либеральных изменений не запланировано, не содержится.
As Eva already mentioned, there are some laws that are set to go into effect in 2011 that do liberalize the freedoms enjoyed by individuals in Kazakhstan. However, they do not extend to freedom of speech or freedom of expression. And there are no plans to lessen the criminalization of defamation and things like that.
Для завершения картины я скажу, что законодательство Казахстана в сфере свободы выражения является одним из самых жестких и самых репрессивных на постсоветском пространстве.
Just to conclude, I'd like to say that the laws and limitations on the freedom of expression in Kazakhstan happen to be some of the most stringent and some of the most draconian in all of the former Soviet republics.
Ну, теперь, наверное, госпожа Фокина расскажет, как обстоят дела в том, что касается свободы совести.
And now maybe Ms. Fokina will say a few things about this situation when it comes to spiritual freedoms in Kazakhstan.
Хотя свобода совести и религии в этой области господин Тажин не давал никаких обещаний в Мадриде, и правительство, очевидно, чувствует себя свободным от обязательств в этой сфере. Тем не менее, поскольку Казахстан в числе приоритетов своих на год председательства обозначил распространение нашего ноу-хау, нашего опыта в области этнической и религиозной толерантности, то вопросам свободы совести и религии мы придаем такое же, уделяем такое же внимание, как и обязательствам Тажина в Мадриде.
So even though Mr. Tajin did not mention specifically the freedom of religion and spiritual freedom during the meetings in Madrid, because one of the goals for their chairmanship of OSCE, the Kazakh government has mentioned they're hoping to extend their, or rather to share their experience with teaching tolerance, religious tolerance, and ethnic tolerance. We feel that this is something that we have to monitor and that we have to pay attention to.
Что же представляет собой сугубо казахстанская модель религиозной толерантности?
So then the question is, what is this model of religious tolerance Kazakhstan?
Практически эта модель ничем не отличается от модели Таджикистана, Туркменистана и Узбекистана.
In essence, this model does not differ at all from the model of Tajikistan, Turkmenistan or Uzbekistan.
В 2003 году был принят закон о борьбе с экстремизмом, и в этом законе в числе угроз экстремизма назван так называемый религиозный экстремизм. И таким образом религиозные организации попали в разряд угроз экстремизма, в разряд угроз для национальной безопасности.
In 2003 a law was implemented to combat extremism, and as one of the points of extremism, or branches of extremism, was considered religious extremism. pardon me. So, in essence, religious expression, religious organizations are now considered in the purview of these laws set up to combat extremism.
И если раньше пристальному вниманию со стороны государства, пристальное внимание уделялось исламским, так называемым нетрадиционным организациям, не входящим в систему духовного управления мусульман Казахстана, ДУМК, то сегодня этот центр внимания переместился на традиционные христианские, но не православные течения, протестантские течения, новое течение вроде церкви саентологии и новое восточное течение типа Бахаи, кришнаитов и так далее.
Whereas the so basically this brought religious organizations into the focus of the government. So whereas the government in the past, before this law, only focused on Islamic organizations that were considered non-traditional organizations or were not part of the traditional, the spiritual board of the Muslims of Kazakhstan, now all religious organizations, including the Christian organizations that are not the Orthodox, that are not part of the Orthodox Christian organizations, and such non-traditional organizations as Church of Scientology and some Western religions as Baha'i and I'm sorry, Eastern religions such as Baha'i are all now under the are now
Krishna.
Being focused and the Hare Krishnas all being focused on by the government.
В стране создана сеть государственных органов, в компетенцию которых входит очень жесткий контроль и административное и уголовное преследование так называемых нетрадиционных религий и тех, кого государство называет деструктивными и тоталитарными сектами.
There is a whole network of organizations that are monitoring very closely religious organizations, religious entities, and entities that they consider destructive religious organizations.
Созданы специальные департаменты при Комитете национальной безопасности, прокуратуре, Министерстве внутренних дел и Министерстве юстиции. И в компетенцию этих департаментов входит интересный круг вопросов: борьба с сепаратизмом, экстремизмом, терроризмом и незарегистрированными религиозными объединениями.
There is a special department that has been that have been opened at the Committee for National Security, the MVD, the Ministry of Internal Affairs, the Ministry of Justice, the Prosecutor General's Office, and they are responsible for monitoring and keeping a close watch over extremist organizations, over terrorist organizations, and over, or as they say, non-traditional religious organizations.
Методы этого контроля и этого преследования репрессивных мер широко известны и определяются их идеологией, методологией определяются в двух центрах. Это антитеррористические центры ОДКБ и Шанхайской организации ШОС.
There are very well established methods that they use for very closely monitoring and oppressing these organizations, these religious organizations that they feel are non-traditional, and these
ОДКБ – организация коллективного договора по безопасности, ТСНГ, и Шанхайская организация сотрудничества.
So, and these are the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement, and also an agreement on…
Организация коллектив ОДКБ, договора коллективной безопасности.
The organization, the agreement on mutual security and cooperation of the CIS.
Процессы эти идут синхронно во всей Средней Азии, в России, в Белоруссии и частично на Кавказе. Синхронно по времени принимаются одинаковые законы и синхронно методологии. Это рейды. Это запреты на деятельность миссионеров, запреты на деятельность незарегистрированных организаций, на распространение религиозной литературы, административное, уголовное преследование и так далее.
So again, the methodology is being implemented simultaneously throughout all the Central Asian countries, throughout Russia, Belarus, and also primarily in the countries of the Caucasus. This include raids, this include against organizations that are considered non-traditional, against religions that are not registered religions, against missionaries of these religious organizations, and against distribution of religious literature.
И если до этого года уголовному преследованию подвергались в основном так называемые нетрадиционные мусульмане, а их к началу этого года прошло через систему уголовного наказания более 700 человек, то в этом году мы имеем уже два уголовных процесса в отношении христиан и саентологов.
So whereas in the past this was geared, these raids or these charges were brought mostly against individuals of, as they call them, non-traditional Muslim organizations and sects. And in the past we've had over 700 individuals that have been affected by this, that have been charged in this way through a criminal bring of criminal charges. Now, this year, we've already had two individuals from the non-traditional Christian organizations, for example, the Church of Scientology.
И, наконец, последнее. Тот закон о религии, который был забракован Конституционным советом, стоит в плане законопроектных работ на начало 2011 года, то есть сейчас же после окончания нашего председательства. И сегодня идет новый административный кодекс, в который полностью перекочевали из действующего старого все репрессивные статьи в отношении религиозных объединений.
And lastly, I'd like to say that the very limiting law on religion that was rejected recently is planned to be reintroduced, the first piece of legislation, in 2011, meaning the year as soon as the chairmanship is over. And likewise, they have transferred into the new criminal code all of the repressive and the intolerant laws and regulations of the previous criminal code.
Administrative
code. Administrative code, and not the criminal code. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ninel Constantinovna. I would like to use this opportunity and also say that we are very pleased that we're joined now by Vera Tkachenko from Legal Policy Research Center. As I mentioned before, Vera is the director of Legal Policy Research Center, and she is also public defender for Yevgeny Zhovtis, a human rights activist who's been an outspoken critic of the regime, who is currently in prison in Kazakhstan. Just to sum up for Vera, that we provided a brief overview of the situation in Kazakhstan. So if you want to add something, please go ahead, but maybe you may want to talk a bit about Yevgeny's case, because maybe that would be what might be of interest to some of you who are following it closely.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming to this meeting and for your attention to the situation in Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan is a huge country. It's ninth biggest country in the world. It's an important strategic partner of the United States of America. It's an important trade partner, you know, for many countries. It's, of course, a full-fledged member of the UN and the OSCE. And it is a country with serious ambitions. And I think the fact that Kazakhstan, you know, worked a lot and very hard on the OSCE bid for the chairmanship and got this bid demonstrates it clearly. You know, civil society in the beginning, some of the non-governmental organizations expressed serious concern that such kind of decision was made because, you know, they thought that a country which falls far short of OSCE standards and commitments is not fit for chairing these organizations. But many, and including Yevgeny Zhovtis, believed that OSCE chairmanship is a strong political stimulus that will actually push Kazakhstan government to introduce some liberal reforms. Moreover, the speech of Foreign Minister of Kazakhstan, Mr. Tajin, in the Madrid Ministerial Council, when he committed to serious reforms of the legislation on political parties, elections, local governance, and mass media, actually gave us some hopes that the situation will change and in the long term it will lead to the political modernization of the country. My colleagues have already shared with you some concerns as far as freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion is concerned, but unfortunately at this stage the coalition of leading human rights organizations of Kazakhstan that was established after the decision of Madrid, and the main aim of this coalition was to monitor the situation, comes to quite disappointing conclusions that the majority of the commitments that were made by Mr. Tajin in Madrid remain unfulfilled. And of course, we have some of the concerning developments, and one of them is the case of Yevgeny Zhovtis. I think that many of you do know Yevgeny Zhovtis. He is one of the leading human rights activists, and not only in Kazakhstan. I think it can be We can say that he's a leading human rights activist in the Eurasian region. He's a very well-known person. He's well-respected at the international arena. And he was quite vocal about the situation with human rights and rule of law in Kazakhstan and also at the international arena. He twice testified to the U.S. Helsinki Commission. He worked with different people in the European Parliament. And he actually was a unifying force also for the civil society, who helped the civil society to frame the message to the international community. And unfortunately, on 26th of July, a tragic accident has happened on the highway when he returned from the fishing on the highway. He was blinded by the oncoming car. And then he saw a man standing just in the middle of the highway. And unfortunately, you know, he hit the pedestrian and the pedestrian died. Evgeny Rovtis called the police, called the ambulance. He didn't actually violate the traffic rules because the allowed speed on the highway is 110 kilometers, and the speed of his car, and it is confirmed by the investigation, was 18 or 90 kilometers. And the man, the pedestrian, and it was at night time, at 10:30 p.m., and the pedestrian was standing, and it's once again confirmed by the investigation, 1 meter, 80 centimeters from the edge of the road. It's actually, you know, in the middle of the road. And though there are sidewalks on two sides of the road, more than 2 meters. The criminal case was launched on the fact of the accident. And the first 2 weeks, Evgeny Rovtis was witnesses in this case, and then he was a suspect in this case. There were serious violations during the investigations, and Evgeny Rovtis actually appealed to the prosecutor's office, appealed to the court, but nothing was changed. And then we hope that in the court they will consider all the violations that happened during the investigation, and actually Evgeny could prove that he was innocent, that there was no crime, that he couldn't foresee a man standing on the highway during the nighttime, that he had no technical capacity, because it's actually just, 2 seconds, that he had no technical capacity to stop his vehicle. The only evidence of Rovtis' guilt is the expert paper prepared on the request of the prosecution office that says that Rovtis had technical capacity to stop the car. The defense team presented to the court 2 independent papers that actually prove that the expert paper prepared on the request of the prosecution office was produced with serious methodological violations as with violation of the criminal procedure code. The defense team also submitted a motion to listen to 2 independent experts who could also confirm this, the conclusions of the independent expert papers. Unfortunately, the court denied the motions of the defense team and didn't consider these facts. Rovtis saw that there were a lot of violations, and the court took only 2 days. And Evgeny Rovtis actually was quite frustrated, and he told that because of the serious violations in the court, he rejects to give the last word to the court, and he asked his defense team not to present the last arguments. Because we requested the judge to give us 1 day for preparation for the last stage of the court, and the judge gave us 40 minutes. And then when the judge left for deliberations, he returned in 30 minutes with approximately 6 or 7 pages verdict, and in accordance with the legislation, the judge can prepare a verdict only while he deliberates in his room. And it's extremely difficult, you can imagine, to type 7-page document within 30 minutes. And actually, he started to read the verdict, and once again, the judge has to read the verdict in full in accordance with Kazakhstani legislation. When he started to read the verdict, he started with words, "The court listened to the last word of Evgeny Rovtis, to the arguments of his defense team." And that was the moment we understood that the verdict was prepared in advance and not in the 30 minutes when judge deliberated. But we had a lot of hopes that, Rovtis was arrested in the court, and he was sent to the pretrial detention center. But the defense team and Rovtis himself really believed that the appeal court will consider these violations and will make the the decision to announce a retrial and to have a thorough review of all the circumstances of this case. But when we arrived to the appeal court, you know, the first negative indicator that nothing is going to change was that Yevgeny Zhovtis was not transported from pretrial detention center to court and was not allowed to defend himself in the courtroom. When the defense team asked why Zhovtis is not transported here, the response of the judge was that because the prosecutor's office didn't ask to harshen the punishment for Yevgeny Zhovtis, that was the reason why he was not transported. And as you might know, Yevgeny Zhovtis was sentenced to 4 years of imprisonment. Once again in the appeal court, one of the first motions, actually, to the court was to consider one of the serious violations, which is changes in the verdict, because we presented, and you remember that I told, you know, about the first verdict, we presented videotape and audio tape when the judge read the verdict, and we presented the copy of the verdict that the defense team received 1 week later. And we saw that there were more than 700 words added to this verdict. Of course, there were no these words that the court listened to, the last word of Zhovtis. You know, that part disappeared, but, you know, they amended the verdict, which is a clear violation of the criminal procedure legislation. The judge, you know, the panel of judges responded that they cannot prove whether, you know, it's an original videotape or whether, you know, something was set up for that. So that's why this motion was denied. We once again requested to consider independent expert papers, but all the motions of the defense team were denied. Another issue that is also of high importance is reconciliation. Yevgeny Zhovtis was convicted of minor crime. In accordance with Kazakhstani legislation, it is minor crime. And if there is a reconciliation with the victim, then, you know, at the investigation stage, the criminal charges should be dropped, and there are no discretions for the, you know, for the investigator or the prosecutor or the judge. You know, the criminal charges has to be dropped. It didn't happen, though there was statement of mother during the investigation already. We received a second statement from the mother of the young man who died during the appeal court. And actually, the mother of the young man who died in the accident came to the appeal court and told to the panel of judges that she received moral and material support from Zhovtis, that she asked the judge, you know, to drop criminal charges against Zhovtis. But, you know, nothing could change anything, and the appeal court upheld the decision of the first court. Unfortunately, you know, representatives of embassies present different information about the Yevgeny Zhovtis case, saying that the legal system of Kazakhstan is based on the continental model, and that is why we have an absolute liability for such kind of crimes. And it is not true. We have a clear provision in the legislation. If there were no intent, if the person could not foresee such kind of, you know, circumstances, there should be no criminal liability for that. Another thing that, you know, once again, the embassy say that mother did agree for reconciliation, but other members of the family did not agree. And that is also not correct, because there is a clear provision in the legislation that the victim of such kind of crimes can be only members of the immediate family. Father and mother, you know, sister and brother, wife or husband and children. This young man was not married. He doesn't have children. His father has died. So the only, you know, victim in this case is mother of the young man. In Kazakhstan, we have, you know, very big extended families, and, you know, such kind of relatives cannot say that they do not agree with the decision of the mother. So that's why this information that is distributed by the embassies is also not true. And in conclusion, you know, Zhovtis was transported to prison in East Kazakhstan Oblast, and that is another interesting story, because when the accident happened, in Kazakhstan, there was only one prison for those people who committed crimes by negligence. And it is located in Astana, in the capital of our country. But you know, already a month later after the accident, after the first court, we started to receive information that largely due to the overcrowding in prison in Astana, it was decided to open another prison in eastern Kazakhstan oblast. And once again, Kazakhstan is a huge country, and Oskemen city, where now this prison is located and where Yevgeny Zhovtis is now, is 1,300 kilometers from Almaty, and it's also quite far from Astana. So the information that we received this week from Yevgeny Zhovtis is that he was not allowed to see his lawyer on Tuesday, because his lawyer went from Almaty to Oskemen to see Yevgeny. He was not allowed, largely due to the announcement of flu quarantine in prison. He was not allowed to receive medicines from his colleagues, and Yevgeny Zhovtis is not feeling very well at this moment. He was not allowed to work in the branch office because he's serving his sentence in prison of open type, and it's actually allowed for these people to work in the organizations which are located in the same city, but then returned to prison. He was not allowed to work in his branch office. He was told to work as an engineer on security. And he told that, you know, he doesn't have any experience as an engineer on security, and he's a legal specialist. But, he was told to work as an engineer on security. He didn't agree with that, and as a result of that, he received, a statement of violation. Which, what does it mean? If he will receive three or four such kind of statements that he violated the rules, he can be transported from this prison of open type to the closed type prison. Which is, of course, of big concern to his defense team and to his many supporters. So until now, we believe that Yevgeny Zhovtis is innocent, and the defense team submitted complaint to the procedural review, and it will be again conducted by the same court at the oblast level. Because justice for Zhovtis will end in the oblast level court. In accordance with the legislation, we cannot appeal to the Supreme Court because Supreme Court doesn't consider crimes minor crimes. And as I have mentioned, Yevgeny Zhovtis is convicted of minor crime. So this is a procedural review. In accordance with the legislation, it can take up to 2 months, and then we will exhaust all the national remedies. And at this time, the defense team has already started to file complaint to the UN Committee on Human Rights. And it will be quite symbolic because Kazakhstan recently ratified first optional protocol to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And only from 30th September this year, we have right to file such kind of complaints. And it will be very symbolic that most probably the first complaint from Kazakhstan will be on the case of its leading human rights activist, Yevgeny Zhovtis.
Thank you very much. It is indeed, thank you for highlighting a rather worrying trend in access to fair trial in Kazakhstan, and the case of Yevgeny Zhovtis being such an example of that. You've heard from the panelists about the general situation in Kazakhstan, about some particular concerns in the realm of freedom of speech, freedom of expression, as well as freedom of consciousness. So now I'd like to turn the floor over to you and get any questions that you have and start the discussion.
Hello. Okay. My name is Acacia Shields, and I'm a consultant with the Open Society Institute. I understand you've all just returned from Washington, and I'd like to hear what kind of response you received to your concerns, and if any, what promises of action on these concerns.
Would you like to address that?
We were consulting here who will respond to that question. Well, we were welcomed warmly in
Washington. However, one of our concerns is the push of the Kazakh government for a summit, OEC summit, to be held in Kazakhstan. And this is one of the things I did not say during the opening statement. And we were talking to the officials in D.C. We have every reason to believe that the summit will happen, unfortunately. And at least that some specific recommendations, strong recommendations, should be put forward for Kazakhstan. More specific than liberalization of legislation on elections and political parties, which we thought is quite a specific thing, but it turned out not to be. We are talking, when we say specific recommendations, things like reopening new investigation and new trial in the case of Evgeny Zhovtis and his release pending that new investigation and trial. If the recommendations, I mean, will be in the field of political parties, perhaps a registration of ALGA will be the eternal registration of ALGA, you know, finalizing this process would be a positive step. If we talk about election legislation, maybe lowering the threshold to 4%. If we talk about freedom of assembly, dropping this restrictive provision in the legislation that requests that provides for requesting a permission, you know, to hold a public assembly, and instead, you know, having kind of notification or something like that. Some very concrete steps. Well, I'm sure that at least the officials we met will think about it, and I'm hopeful.
This is a very good response. Thank you. Thank you for your great question. Any other questions? Oh, yeah, over there.
Thank you very much. I'm Steve Hubble from the Open Society Fellowship Program, and I have a question about the anti-defamation legislation that was described and its effect on freedom of the press. My first question is whether the application of that legislation is at the sole discretion of the prosecutor's office, and secondly, what provisions the media have already begun to undertake for prior clearance of reports that might violate the letter of that legislation.
Если какие-то конкретные шаги, которые они должны заранее принять перед тем, как они публикуют какую-то личную информацию о человеке.
Что касается меры пресечения, естественно, это прерогатива суда, прерогатива судьи. Так же, как везде, прокурор может сделать свою заявку, но решение принимает судья. Лишить свободы или приговорить к штрафу или оправдать. Ну, оправдать это вопрос теоретический.
In terms of the charges and of the sentencing, those are the prerogatives of the judge and of the court. The prosecutor can make recommendations, but ultimately the judge has to decide on the charges. And the sentencing of the individual.
Что касается второй части вашего вопроса, то закон о повышенной ответственности за публикацию фактов частной жизни принят только вчера, 19 ноября. Как это отразится на практике, я думаю, что это отразится не лучшим образом, но мы пока можем только прогнозировать.
In terms of the second part of your question, this the new law regarding a heightened level of responsibility for disclosing personal or private information, this law was just implemented yesterday, November 19th. So we can only guess as to what the effects are going to be, but we can safely assume that they're not going to be good for freedom of expression.
Очевидно, что жанр журналистского расследования будет применяться еще меньше, чем сейчас. И очевидно, что оппозиционные издания, которых у нас чрезвычайно мало, то есть это штучный материал в масштабах 50 изданий по стране, они будут подвергаться еще большим репрессиям.
So we can say that the genre of investigative journalism is going to be used even less frequently, and that opposition media, opposition publications, of which we have a fairly small amount, maybe 50 throughout the whole country, are going to be negatively affected by this new law as well.
И, естественно, у средств массовой информации есть выбор или идти на риск и публиковать какие-то достоверные факты, показывающие в негативном свете чиновников, или молчать об этом и давать только материалы, которые восхваляют чиновника.
So obviously the mass media is going to face a choice whether they are going to publish negative information regarding bureaucrats and politicians, or whether they're just going to basically publish laudatory articles regarding the bureaucrats and politicians.
Если я правильно поняла вопрос, то ответ такой.
If I understood your question correctly, that's my response.
So one has to really know that there are very, very few independent media outlets in Kazakhstan. Я просто говорю, еще раз подчеркиваю, что очень-очень мало независимых медийных газет в Казахстане. So just wanted to make sure that was clear. Any other questions? Yes, please.
My name is Katya Kumkova. I'm also from LSI, from a website called Eurasianet. I guess I'll speak English first, Russian second. My questions are actually a follow-up on the anti-defamation law. I was curious about some of the details because it's something I know nothing about. And secondly, to kind of bring together everything that you've talked about and the media, how have these issues been covered in the media about human rights, about freedom of expression and religion and so on? Вопрос, как бы по следам предыдущего вопроса, просто, может быть, вы могли бы рассказать несколько деталей вот этого нового закона, для меня это абсолютно новое, как бы в чем заключается вот новое...
Какой именно закон?
По дефамации, по...
О частной жизни,
да? Да, и я просто договорю второй вопрос. Может быть, вы можете немножко рассказать про то, как освещается все то, что сегодня обсуждалось, да, свобода слова, свобода религии и так далее, как это освещается в СМИ в Казахстане?
Каких СМИ?
В Казахстане, да, в местных. Спасибо.
Нужно учитывать, что в казахстанском праве, в казахстанском законодательстве нет понятия публичного лица, общественного лица. Это другая правовая система, в отличие по сравнению с американской. И здесь, по нашему закону, все граждане равны абсолютно одинаково.
You have to keep in mind that we have a very different law in terms of individuals in the Republic of Kazakhstan. There is no such thing as a public individual, public entity. Everyone is considered to be, regardless of their status, everyone is considered to be a private citizen, a private individual.
То есть чрезмерная роскошь, чрезмерное удовольствие какого-то государственного служащего – это тоже его личное дело. И теперь, если об этом будут писать, то могут просто сесть в тюрьму.
So in other words, outlandish expenditures, outlandish lifestyle of a government official is basically their private prerogative. That's their private business. And so if organization of mass media publicizes this, basically they can be charged.
Кто пишет о проблемах, кто пишет о правах человека, реально пишет в казахстанских СМИ, вот Анна уже сказала, что у нас чрезвычайно мало независимых СМИ и оппозиционных СМИ. Если в стране зарегистрировано официально 3000 средств массовой информации, то независимыми мы можем назвать 10 изданий, не больше, и около 5 оппозиционных. Вот эти издания, а также незначительное количество интернет-сайтов пишут об этом реально.
In terms of how this is covered, is Anna already pointed out, we have a very, very limited number of independent and opposition media organizations, as if there are officially 3,000 mass media organizations registered, entities registered in the Republic of Kazakhstan, there are about 10 independent mass media organizations and about 5 opposition mass media organizations officially registered, along with a handful of internet organizations or entities.
Я хочу подчеркнуть, что в Казахстане не осталось ни одной независимой телекомпании, ни одного независимого радио. Последняя попытка независимого телевизионного вещания через спутник сейчас закончилась тем, что с территории Казахстана вещание с этого спутника, это телекомпания К+, заглушено.
I would also like to point out that there are no independent television stations left, and there are no independent radio stations left in the Republic of Kazakhstan. Recently, there was an attempt to provide an independent satellite broadcast, which resulted in that satellite, the channel Kabu?
K+.
K+, channel K+. Basically is blocked. Their satellite transmissions are blocked in the Republic of Kazakhstan.
Я тоже, наверное, по-русски буду говорить сначала. Меня зовут Маша Лисицына, знакома с большинством с правовой инициативы открытого общества. Я хотела спросить, есть ли понимание или догадки, вот почему такое ухудшение сейчас, в 2009 году, да? Это внутренние процессы в Казахстане, это какие-то мировые процессы, это региональное. И если есть понимаем, почему такое ухудшение ситуации произошло, стало ли это такой новой реальностью для казахстанских НПО? По-другому ли вам придется сейчас строить свои отношения с властями Казахстана? Или, по сути, ваша работа не меняется? И как бы извечный вопрос, а что делать? Да? Что делать международным организациям, что делать НПО в Казахстане для того, чтобы как-то этому противодействовать?
I'm Masha Lisitsina from the Open Society Justice Initiative, and I just wanted to ask colleagues why in 2009, like, why it's always decrease in the situation happens, if it's absolutely internal processes in Kazakhstan or some global processes, regional, that affect it. And if so, whether it's a new reality for the Kazakhstan NGOs, do they reconsider the methods, how they will be working, or they stay the same, and if there are recommendations for international organizations on the internal questions, what to do now?
Thank you very much, Michelle. Ninel Konstantinovna from Almaty Helsinki Committee would like to respond.
Мне бы, например, не хотелось, чтобы у вас сложилось впечатление, что вот это внезапное ухудшение ситуации произошло именно в этом году.
I really would not want you to think that this just happened very suddenly, this decrease in human rights and human freedoms happened very suddenly in 2009.
Мы констатируем эту тенденцию уже в течение примерно 5-7 лет. Сначала темпы были усиливались, а потом мы 3 года еще назад говорили, что темпы изменений угрожающие стали.
We've noticed this trend for about 5 to 7 years now, this negative trend. And slowly, initially, it slowly increased in speed. We've said maybe 3 years ago that this it was very rapidly, it was dangerously rapidly, the standards were decreasing.
Почему ситуация с правами человека стремительно ухудшается во всем среднеазиатском регионе и на пространстве СНГ? Это разговор долгий.
It would be a very long conversation to discuss why the rights of human rights are degrading in the whole region of Central Asia and the former Soviet Union.
Но то, что в преддверии нашего председательства особое внимание к Казахстану было привлечено и со стороны международного сообщества, и изнутри со стороны правозащитных организаций, и приобрело системный характер, это помогло высветить более выпукло эти процессы. И, конечно, вызывает удивление, почему эти процессы не замедляются именно в преддверии председательства. Хотя бы какая видимость могла бы быть создана? Почему этого не делается?
So I think the question is, with this, the upcoming chairmanship, it has really focused the light both from the outside organizations and from internal human rights organizations on this, these problems, the human rights problems in Kazakhstan. I think the better question is, why has this continued to happen despite the upcoming chairmanship of Kazakhstan? In OSCE, and why you would think that they would actually there would be some sort of an improvement with the focus being on Kazakhstan, but that has not occurred.
К сожалению, оправдались наши худшие опасения, что решение председательства Казахстана в ОБСЕ не улучшит ситуацию, только ухудшит ее. И дело вот в чем. Наше руководство, как говорится, на голубом глазу поверило, что получил этот почетный пост за особые заслуги и что это есть акт признания международным сообществом благополучия положения с правами человека.
Unfortunately, our worst fears have been realized that this granting of the chairmanship to Republic of Kazakhstan and OSCE would not improve, but would exacerbate the situation. And I think that the reason this happened is that basically our leadership has decided that this was somehow an endorsement of them being given the chairmanship, was somehow an endorsement of their current policies, and have emboldened them in pursuing those policies.
Проще говоря, получилось так, что международное сообщество развязало руки нашему руководству. А с другой стороны, это закономерный исторический и политический процесс, потому что развитие в другом направлении невозможно у этих режимов. Но это уже другой разговор. Это уже разговор политолога.
Saying it very plainly, basically the chairmanship and OSCE has loosened the reins for our administration, for our government, freed their hand to pursue their policies. In general, why is this happening? Because these type of governments historically cannot move in any other direction. This is predetermined which way the development of this type of government must head. But this is a very long and complex discussion.
Мне бы хотелось добавить, чтобы у вас не сложилось впечатление, что мы в панике, мы приехали кричать «караул», мы больше ничего не можем сделать, спасите нас.
I just want to make sure you don't get the sense that we've come here to kind of cry fire and to say, please help us, there's nothing we can do.
Ситуация тяжелая, но ситуация не новая. У нас уже были в нашей новейшей независимой истории такие периоды, может быть, еще тяжелее были периоды.
The situation is not new in our brief history of independence. We've already had similar periods, periods that have been as difficult as this, possibly we'll have periods that are even more difficult in the future.
Мы активизируем работу с властью. Благо сейчас власть сама заинтересована продемонстрировать свое активное сотрудничество с гражданским обществом. У нас очень медленно, скажу по своей сфере, но все-таки появляется, формируется настоящее журналистское сообщество в гражданском смысле этого слова. Мы продолжаем работать каждый в своей сфере. Эти процессы очень медленно, но они идут.
We are actively working with the government, with the administration, partly due to the fact that they have become much more interested in working with civil society organizations to show that they are working with such organizations. And also I'd like to say that we are, in my particular sphere of activity, we are very slowly, but we are developing news journalists in the classical sense, the civic journalists, and it's happening very slowly, but we are developing those individuals.
Да, и в этой работе поддержка международного сообщества, она, конечно, чрезвычайно важна.
And in doing this, the support of the international community is very vital.
I would like just to make a short comment, actually, to answer your question. This was also one of the messages, our messages during the meetings with policymakers and decision makers in Washington, D.C., is that current situation with human rights and rule of law in Kazakhstan is at this stage not only the responsibility of Kazakhstani government, it's also a shared responsibility of all the OSCE participating states. That's why it's so important now for all the OSCE participating states, you know, to defend the values of the organizations and to speak up about these issues.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, there's another question. And then Erica.
Я по-русски сразу задам вопрос, потом переведу на английский. Hi. Меня зовут Музафар Сулейманов. Я представляю Комитет по защите журналистов и Евразийскую программу. У меня несколько вопросов. Во-первых, не могли бы вы прокомментировать, вот вы говорите, Тамара Калеева, вы говорите, что вы встречаетесь с властью. А ведутся ли разговоры о том, чтобы установить какой-то лимит на вот эти многомиллионные иски, которые подают государственные чиновники газеты? Вот было дело это Жаргана знаменитое, сейчас ведется дело газеты «Республика», вот, и если вы сможете прокомментировать по этим делам. И также хотелось бы узнать, повлияло ли либо как-то принятие закона по регулированию интернета на вообще деятельность интернет-СМИ в Казахстане. Я перейду свой вопрос на английский. My name is Muzaffar Sulaymanov. I work for the Committee to Protect Journalists, Europe and Central Asia Program. And my questions are to Tamara Kaleva and other participants who meet with the government of Kazakhstan is whether the government plans to set up limits for exorbitant fines that government bureaucrats impose on and seek from independent newspapers. And we have a case of Tazhargan newspaper, and right now there is a case, famous case of another newspaper, Respublika. And my second question is whether the Internet Regulation Bill has somehow affected online journalism in Kazakhstan. Thank you.
Что касается регламентации сумм взыскания морального вреда, ну или проще штрафов со стороны, да, штрафов с журналистов и со средств массовой информации, гражданское общество об этом говорит давно. Что касается вот нашего фонда, у нас давно разработаны все законодательные предложения. Мы говорим об этом в Министерстве культуры и информации, говорим в парламенте, говорим об этом в Верховном суде. То есть дискуссия по этому вопросу ведется активно и постоянно. Но, к сожалению, мы взаимопонимание даже в зачаточном состоянии до сих пор со стороны властных структур не встречаем.
In terms of the issue of the fines and the penalties to individual journalists or to organizations of mass media, we have been speaking, the civil society has been speaking to the administration, the government for a very long time about this, and my organization itself has been discussing this for a very long time. With them. We have specific various laws that we've proposed on numerous occasions to the Ministry of Culture, to the Parliament, to the Ministry of Justice. But unfortunately, to this day, we can't see eye to eye on this, despite the fact that we've proposed this new legislation on numerous occasions.
Да, и, к сожалению, разорение оппозиционного издания – это наиболее популярный метод сейчас, вы это знаете.
And unfortunately, as you yourself know, the bankrupting of independent or opposition media is a very popular way of silencing that media right now.
Что касается закона об интернете, это закон долгосрочного действия. Это закон, который содержит столько неопределенных и глобальных норм, что он может быть использован в политических целях в любой момент и в любом аспекте.
In terms of the new internet law, it's a very wide-ranging and long-term law. It is so amorphous and so global. Or so general that it can be used in numerous ways against mass media organizations.
Реальные последствия, первые реальные последствия можно наблюдать в том, что на ряде сайтов закрываются разделы форумов и комментариев.
And one of the things that you can see already, one of the first effects of this law is that a whole series of sites have closed down their chat and their forum sections in these sites.
Ну и сейчас гораздо больше стало казахстанских пользователей открывать свои сайты в иностранной зоне, не в казахстанской зоне, в казахстанском сегменте интернета.
And so one of the other effects has been that a lot more of the citizens of Kazakhstan have been setting up their sites overseas, outside of the Kazakh service providers.
Мы прогнозируем, что этот закон будет востребован на практике, опять же, в борьбе со свободой слова, во второй половине 2010-го, особенно в 2011 году, в канун президентских выборов.
We feel that this law is going to be used most effectively against freedom of expression towards the second half of 2010, and even more so in 2011 in the run-up to the presidential elections.
Yeah, thank you. Erica, you had a question.
Thank you. I'm Erica Daly with the Open Society Institute, and I had a slightly broader question really for any of you, as you all have the expertise in Kazakhstan. Looking at the situation from the outside, and even in the very specific case of Evgenia Zhovtis, we're seeing a tremendously challenging environment for you to be working in. If the kinds of procedural violations that you've been describing and advocating against are allowed to take place, it speaks volumes about the rule of law in the country. And I'm wondering, given the fact that Kazakhstan is a very valuable commodity these days, literally, that being energy rich during the middle of a global economic crisis, that the Europeans, for example, are not going to have a stake in challenging the government on its internal practices. I wonder if you could say a few words about your own experiences inside the country for what has been effective. Where are the checks and balances on President Nazarbayev, for example, or on the legislature? It's a broader question.
Can I start answering while he's translating for my colleagues? Well, it depends very much on the situation. For instance, international pressure worked very effectively in the case of the religious law. In the case of the internet law, it didn't work. So I guess... I mean, there are no recipes, of course. I mean, unfortunately, if we only knew what to do to change that situation, what is effective, I think, and what is important for international organizations is to support local organizations' ability to continue analyzing, you know, what's going on in the country, analyzing legislation. And thus providing policy alternative to the government. I mean, that's the only way. I have to say, in 2010 and in 2011, there are a lot of donors that are not going to be present anymore in Central Asia. So the financial situation for local organizations will be very bad. So that is one of the things we've been discussing, you know, even with our meetings at USAID and State Department to focus on this and not to give up to be vocal on Kazakhstan, because nevertheless, I think that President Nazarbayev cares what the international community thinks of him.
And here, if I may, Erica, as the chair of the Executive Council of SARS Foundation Kazakhstan, I really feel that since government is open to the dialogue and OSCE 2010, as well as some other factors such as the Universal Periodic Review, such as the upcoming review of the Committee on the Rights of the Child, these are all opportunities for us to build civil society's strengths to enter into a meaningful dialogue with the government, at least when it is still willing to listen to what civil society has to say. So this is where I think international funders should definitely focus, to echo what Eva was saying. Кто-нибудь хочет ответить на вопрос? Данина, кстати.
Я считаю, что это корневой вопрос был задан, главный. Потому что все, о чем мы сейчас говорили, о свободе СМИ, о свободе религии, о честном правосудии, о беженцах, о чем угодно. Все это только иллюстрация главного.
I think that this is really the key question that you have posed, because everything that we've just been talking about, freedom of media and expression, freedom of religion, the question of refugees, all of these are just the symptoms of the root issue.
Сегодня в Казахстане пока еще отсутствует главное право человека на государственное и политическое устройство, обеспечивающее полное и всестороннее выполнение всех прав и свобод. Вот так, статьей 25, по-моему, декларации.
Basically, right now in Kazakhstan, we do not have a commitment from the government that provides for the provision of the guaranteeing the freedom of human rights. I believe it's chapter or article 25 of the convention, and the government is not ready to provide that those fundamental rights to the citizens of its country.
Не вдаваясь опять-таки в политологические рассуждения, в которых мы не верны здесь ни время, ни место, всем нам понятно, что если государственное устройство страны таково, что невозможно обеспечить, значит, надо что-то делать с государственным устройством, с одной стороны.
On the one hand, without going into a lot of political discussions and debates that we don't have the time for right now, basically the essence is, if the government is such where is not able to or not willing to provide those rights, then basically the government has to be changed.
Но это не наша задача, это задача политиков, политических партий.
But again, this is not our job. This is something that's up to politicians and political parties.
Из всех разговоров, что мы вели вот эти 4 дня в Вашингтоне, у меня сложилось впечатление, что есть некоторые подвижки в отношении Запада к проблемам прав человека в постсоветских странах, и тем не менее страны Запада хотели бы как-то девиться и невинность соблюсти и все остальное приобрести. С одной стороны экономические интересы, с другой стороны третья корзина ОБСЕ.
From these 4 days that we've had the discussions here in the United States, get a sense that there is some movement towards pressuring the government towards increasing the human rights in general, but at the same time, I think they want it kind of both ways. They want to have that access to energy and they have that very positive relationship with Kazakhstan, and on the other hand, they want to see some movement towards improving the human rights situation.
Мне кажется, что раньше мы совершенно не обращались к этому механизму. Стоит подумать о том, как этот механизм использовать. Вероятно, следует разъяснять мировому бизнес-сообществу о том, куда они идут работать, на какие условия идут работать, и что их может ожидать в стране, где нет справедливого правосудия, нет системы сдержек противовесов, где все решают либо личные контакты с высшим политическим руководством, либо большие суммы взяток. Простите, и я думаю, что вот этот кризисный период, скорее всего, может побудить это бизнес-сообщество задуматься и включить уже свои механизмы.
I think one of the things that we haven't used at all in the past and that may be a good direction to go is to try to educate the business entities that deal with these countries exactly what kind of a environment they're getting themselves into, an environment that doesn't have a functioning legal system, that doesn't have appropriate checks and balances. And perhaps this is something the financial crisis maybe will give us this better opportunity to work with various business entities that want to get into these countries and to maybe have them try to effect some changes in these countries.
Ведь ни для кого не секрет, что современная демократия в том виде, какая она есть, сложилась под давлением людей, которым есть что терять.
And everyone knows that modern democracies basically evolved due to the fact that people who built them had something to lose.
Thank you very much, Nil. I have to say that we only have 2 minutes left before. So if you have a very quick question, go ahead.
Go ahead. My name is Terry Ann Hurley. And I was a little bit curious about the cycle of violence in Kazakhstan. There are many reports of people who have committed crimes who have been violated physically and mentally and emotionally and assaulted sexually. And I was wondering about the hazing procedures for the police that may contribute to that when they become police officers. Does this happen in the police academy? And also, does this happen in the military towards people who are training to become soldiers? Are they violated in these types of ways? And is this a kind of cycle of violence that they perpetrate on, these people who are prisoners, sort of, you know? This is something that they're trained to do.
Меня зовут Терри Эндерли.
Цикл насилия, физического, эмоционального, подлого насилия над задержанными
насилие против самих сотрудников, когда они вступают в, скажем, в полицейские академии, в военных академиях, когда они становятся вот, молодые, молодые солдаты, молодые полицейские, против них применяются какие-то физические меры, которые после этого они уже...
Вера, would you like to
talk?
Пусть Вера.
It's a wide question also, and I'd like to start from the first issue, whether, you know, violence is used against those people who are detained and whether, you know...
No, the prisoners, the police and the military. I'd like to just concentrate on that. Okay.
You mean the violence in these facilities? And whether it's...
As police officers in the training facilities for the police and also for the military, whether they are violated when they are in their training to be military personnel, where they are training to be police officers.
You know, in 2008, Kazakhstan ratified optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture, which actually requires to establish national preventive mechanism and which actually can give access to these closed facilities. Because at this moment, it's quite difficult to get access to the, for example, police academies or military academies and to make monitoring of how the process, how they live there, whether there is, you know, serious violence in these facilities happening. So there were no serious research done in Kazakhstan on these particular issues. But I don't think this is actually the main reason that in the end, when they become police officers or military officers, that this is the main reason why they violate and why they actually, you know, continue using this violence.
Right, it's primarily in Russia, primarily in military. That's probably what you're referring to, right? Primarily in military.
You're also talking about what's occurring in the post-Soviet states. And that would maybe be a spillover from, you know, the communist regime and how they treated their personnel. And apparently there are a lot of examples of military personnel who have been hazed within their community. And that information has been released. And I was wondering if there was spillover in Kazakhstan, whether this is a cycle of violence that people have. It's a learned behavior, basically.
Right, absolutely. This is a very interesting comment. I'm sure, you know, maybe in our future work we can look into it. And unfortunately, Jemis is not with us, and she would be the perfect person for you to ask those questions. Having said that, I just want to thank everyone for coming because the time is up. And unless our dear panelists have any last words of wisdom to the international community, последние слова мудрости. Ива, do you want to say something?
По корабельному закону Юнга начинает первым. Я как Юнга отвечу.
Пожалуйста.
На совете. Многие из вас здесь, с многими из вас, с некоторыми мы лично знакомы, работали вместе, но я понимаю, что здесь собрались в основном коллеги, правозащитники или люди, имеющие отношение к правам человека, которые хорошо разбираются в существе проблем и, самое главное, которые очень озабочены тем, что происходит в Казахстане, и понимают, что мир не изолирован, и все, что происходит у нас, каким-то образом скажется и на всем мире.
I see that the majority of the people here, or a lot of the people here we've worked with in the past, and the majority of the people here are individuals who are work in organizations dedicated to the issues of human rights. I'm very much concerned with the issues of human rights because you know that we live in a global community and that what affects what happens in Kazakhstan ultimately affects all of us no matter where we live.
Скажу вам, что на практике вот активный обмен информацией очень сильно помогает нам в нашей работе, очень сильно помогают ваши реакции. В частности, реакции и Human Rights Watch, и Freedom House, и Институт открытого общества. И я после этих встреч, которые были в Вашингтоне и сейчас, только лишний раз убеждаюсь, что вот такая методика работы, постоянный обмен информацией, сотрудничество, это залог того, что когда-нибудь мы что-нибудь, чего-нибудь получим, к чему-нибудь придем.
I just want to stress that this exchange, this frequent, constant exchange of information with our colleagues, with especially organizations such as Human Rights Watch, Open Society Institute, Freedom House, that this is really vital for us. This is very important. And after the series of meetings that we've had over the course of this week, I get the sense that this feedback and this exchange of information is really something that maybe eventually will bring about some change, that we will be able to accomplish something through this cooperation and this feedback that I get from you when I come here.
Большое спасибо вам за моральную поддержку, которую мы очень сильно чувствуем и которая для нас очень важна.
I'd like to especially thank you for all your moral support that we really feel, that we really sense, and that helps us a lot.
Thank you very much, Ninel Konstantinova. I just want to finish by saying that there is a wonderful report that was put together by the OEC 2010 Coalition of Kazakhstani NGOs and Freedom House. We have one hard copy, but I was told that if you want, exactly, yeah. But if you want more hard copies, if you talk to Eva here, I'm sure we're gonna email them to you. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.